Our next story is born of the fevered imagination of writer Alyssa Nutting. It's performed by our very own Joyce Lee. Parents of small children should know that it does include some fantastical graphical imagery, and the little ones might not appreciate it.
I am boiling inside a kettle with five other people. Our limbs are bound and our intestines and mouths are stuffed with herbs and garlic, but we can still speak. We smell great despite the pain. The guy next to me resembles Elvis because of his fluffy, vaguely pubic black hairdo. It may be the humidity. Across the kettle, a man is trying to cry, but his tears keep mixing in with his sweat, and instead of looking sad, he just seems extra warm. For a moment, I have the romantic thought that maybe we are all actually boiling in tears, hundreds and thousands of them, the sweetest true tears of infants and children instead of a yellowy, thickish chicken broth. I'm the only woman in this kettle, which strikes me as odd. I'm voluptuous and curvy. I can understand why someone would want to gobble me up. The men do not look so delicious. One, a very old man across the kettle from me, keeps drifting in and out of a semi-conscious state. His head droops down towards the broth, and then suddenly, just as the tip of his nose touches one of the surface bubbles, he snaps upright and utters a name.
Stanley!
That's the first one. The second, David. We think he's saying the names of his children. We even continue to humor ourselves as he gets to the 15th. Perhaps he's moved on to grandchildren. But as he yells his 40th name, it's clear that he's not poignant. He's just nuts. He isn't crazy, the crying man sobs. These are the last few moments of our lives. Shouldn't we all be calling out the names of everyone we ever met, ever known, ever loved? Uh-huh, agrees Elvis. But the man to Elvis's left is not as fond of this idea. A series of teardrop tattoos on his upper cheek indicate victories in multiple prison kills. Ironically, he is tied up right next to the crying man.
I like quiet,
the tattoo man says. The man directly next to me on the right, he isn't really my type. His features are youthful and feminine in a way that makes him resemble a boyish Peter Pan. But he's smiling at me through the spices and trimmings shoved into his mouth, undeterred by them as he manages a nice, soft look. Since we're about to be eaten, I lower my standards and choose to be bold. I love you, I say. It's coming from a good pretend place. I just want to pack as much into these last few moments as I can. Yet when I watch the impact my words have on his face, the effect is very real. Maybe, I figure, since we are all cooking towards the finish line, things are kind of fast-forwarding. Maybe what I just said could actually be true. And then it is. Seconds pass. And love for him grows suddenly like ice crystals or sea monkeys all over my body. We stare at one another and he scoots towards me as much as our fetters will allow, enough that our fingertips can touch. I love you too, he says. If we weren't tied up, I'd give you the softest kiss you'd ever felt in your life right on your steamy lips. From the corner of my eye, I notice the tattoo man, who up until this point hasn't been very chatty, is suddenly showing me variegated upper teeth, his lips pulled back wide in order to verbalize the list of things he would do to me if we were not tied up. And they are not romantic or legal. You're a monster, my lover says to him. The rest of us shouldn't have to boil in your juices. Uh-huh, agrees Elvis. We're dying just like this criminal, weeps the crying man. It isn't fair. Suddenly, the old man raises his head. A drop of yellow broth falls from his chin.
Amanda,
he rasps. Then his eyes roll back and his head falls down. I smile. That's my name. Glee fills me, though I don't know why he just spoke my name. Amanda, my lover whispers my name into the hot mist. What if it's some kind of death list, the crying man snivels. What if that old cadre has been here for ages, been in pots with hundreds of people who've all been eaten, but he always gets left behind because he's so old. It would drive a person crazy. It might make him repeat over and over again the names of people he had to watch die in a half-hearted attempt to bring them back. After pondering this, the crying man lets out a long, shrill sob that is chirp-like. It reminds me of a parakeet I had when I was young. I try to remember its name.
Dad,
the old man says. That's my name, my lover laughs, bouncing a little in the water. He just said our names back to back. It's like our love planted them in his head. The tattooed man makes a gagging noise. For fun, I ask everyone to please mouth his name, just to see if the old man will say it next. I encourage them to hurry up and do it while the old man's head is flaccid under the layer of broth. Hector, whispers the crying man. Sam, sings Elvis.
Off,
mutters the tattooed man. Dan and I watch the old man with anticipation. Finally, his aged face surfaces, and he gums the taste of the broth droplets on his cheeks before saying,
Lancelot.
See, my lover coos, our names before, it was magic. I want this moment to stay. I want it to multiply on and on with the unnatural growth of things just before death, speeding off the pure fat of life's last moments. I want the feeling of our brushing fingertips to breed like cancerous cells. When the steel door opens, even the old man sits up and blinks his wet lashes. A chef walks in, sharpening a long knife against a stone.
Who first?
He barks.
All right, then.
The chef points his knife at me and moves it a little like he's writing his name in the air.
I'll take you since you're the meatiest.
I give my lover a farewell glance, but suddenly his screams fill the room. No! He cries, thrashing madly and fish-like. Take me in her place, please. I beg you, make her the very last one.
Okay.
Agrees the chef. But first he twirls his knife at me a little more like he's casting a spell just so I know who's in charge. Two men, wearing long oven gloves, come over and cut my lover's rope. He stretches his lips out to kiss me, but is too soon pulled away and carried from the room like a ladder. One man at his shoulders, one man at his feet. Please, he begs, one kiss. But the two men aren't as permissive as the cook. They possibly do not speak English or any language. That was so beautiful, sobs the crying man. Such love. Despite my grief, I try to live in the moment. Do you sing? I ask Elvis Sam. There's a moon out tonight, he croons. The garlic cloves really muffle his vibrato. When the chef and his goons re-enter, the tattooed man speaks up.
Take me,
he says.
I hate these people.
So they take him. As he's pulled from the water, we see that he also has a tattoo on his arm that reads, Mother. This makes crying Hector cry even harder. I should have called my mother more, he laments. Told her I loved her and appreciated her cooking. This one's for the mother, says Elvis Sam. He began singing, You are the sunshine of my life. Crying Hector's sobs are uncontrollable. His emotion touches me. I watch the ripples in the broth move from his torso over to mine, lapping at my stomach like a soft current. It will be okay, Hector. I want to extend my foot across our little bouillon pond and wipe his tears with my brothy toes, but my legs are bound together at the ankles. When the door opens, four men, increasingly sour from the first to the fourth, enter with the chef.
I need two,
he orders. The men grab Elvis Sam and Crying Hector, who continue singing and weeping respectively as they are carried away. Alone with the old man, it is very quiet, and I realize how loud the boiling noises have become. He lifts his head and says,
Heidi.
I knew a Heidi once. From ballet class in high school, I imagine being taken from the kettle and laid onto a silver platter next to a giant cake, and on top of that cake is Heidi, posed in graceful pirouette. When they lift the old man from the broth, I'm surprised to see that he's missing a leg. I wonder if he arrived with it missing or if they'd eaten his leg and then putting him back. With all the others gone, the boiling bubbles feel far more scalding than before. I'm bad at science and uncertain if before we had all somehow shared the heat, but now I alone bear its brunt. It seems so. I miss my lover, and my willingness to suffer perhaps makes the broth feel hotter as well. As the footsteps come, I wonder if there will be anything after death. Perhaps Dan will be waiting for me on the other side, and our new and budding love will be allowed to blossom from the beyond. Then, although morbid, I try to prepare myself for what it will feel like when they cut me up. There are worse ways to die, I tell myself, than being boiled and then sliced with a knife. But it takes me a while to think of one. Finally, I imagine being carried out the door to a table where all of my five kettle mates are waiting, forks and knives in their hands, skin still pink from the boiling broth. I imagine Dan saying he has dibs on my heart, and the others laughing, and Elvis singing good night, sweetheart, as my carving starts, and I lose consciousness to the sounds of battling forks and knives. This daydream dampens the horror of my fate, like a bowl placed over a candle. You can bear anything, I tell myself, if you know you're not alone. And the cold air stings my cooked skin as the men lift me in their arms. Their fingers are strong with knowledge. I'm only going where the others have already been.
Thanks so much to Alyssa Nutting and to Joyce Lee for her performance. No Joyce Lees were harmed in the making of this piece. The story comes to us from Alyssa Nutting's book, Unclean Jobs for Women and Girls. Learn more at alyssanutting.com and we'll have a link at snapjudgment.org. That story is produced by Eliza Smith and Mark Ristich with sound design by Leon Morimoto.